Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Heartland Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in economics and business. This is Principles of Microeconomics, Econ 101, Section 1 for Spring Semester 2012. Lecture 21, delivered on April 17, 2012. The title of this lecture is Factor Employment.
Today, factor employment. This picks up on where we left off in the last lecture. Now, in the last lecture, I had shown you the revenue side with respect to a business that was employing various levels of a factor. In this case, we'll say that it's labor because that's the most important one with respect to the discussion that will follow, or the narrative that follows. Now, at the end of the exercise you're going to answer a question that will be posed, and I will put the question here on the board. But to begin this, I had gone through the business side, the employers, the demanders of the factor, the demanders of labor. And just to revive that for you, the first column is the amount of the factor of production. We can say the amount of labor being hired. And the second column shows you the amount of actual output that is being created. With no units of labor, you get no output. With one unit, you get 20. With two units, you get 39. Three units, you get 57. So the total output is increasing. And as you learned in a previous lecture, the law of diminishing marginal productivity is in play here. In column 6, you will see that diminishing marginal productivity of labor sinking its teeth in. And that would be true in every one of these four different scenarios. You can see that the law of diminishing marginal productivity is in play. As the amount of labor is hired, the extra output from the last worker declines. But then the price of the output for the price-taking firm, it can sell as much as it wants at a prevailing price of a dollar a unit. And you can see that for the price-taking firm in sheets 1 and 3, that a dollar a unit, it can sell, make and sell as much as it wants. Now in sheets 2 and 4, you will see that the firm is a price-seeking firm. In other words, it has a concentrated market so that it faces a downward-sloping demand curve for labor. The price is going to fall as they try to sell more because they are facing downward-sloping demand for the product. So in a price-seeking firm, you would have 20 units, they could sell at an average price of $1.40 a unit. But for 39 units, they could sell those 39 units at an average price of $1.31. 57 units, they could sell at an average price of $1.22. So in sheets 2 and 4, the firm is more like a monopolist, or at least it's facing a downward sloping demand curve for its product. Now, in all of the sheets, of course, total revenue is price times quantity. So in sheet 1, for example, 20 units at a price of a dollar a unit comes out with $20. 39 units at a price of a dollar a unit comes out with $39. And that's true in all of the sheets, except that in sheets 2 and 4, the price is going down as they produce more. So in sheet 2, for example, 20 units at $1.40 brings in total revenue of 20 times $1.40, or $28. 39 units at $1.31 each brings in $51, etc. And then your marginal revenue is obviously the extra amount of money that you are bringing in, the extra revenue. So for a price seeking firm, for a price taking firm, 39 minus 20 gets you $19, 57 minus 39 gets you $18, etc. And in a Now the marginal revenue product per unit sold. This is column 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Column 7. You're going to take the marginal revenue, column 5, divided by the marginal physical product, column 6. So the extra revenue from the first worker in sheet 1, the extra revenue from the first worker is $20, divided by the 20 units he made. So he brought into the company's cash drawer a dollar for each unit he made. The second worker brought in an extra $19 and produced 19 units, so the extra revenue he brought into the firm would be $19 divided by 19 units, or a dollar each. And you can see that in sheets 1 and 3, that's going to be the same, because those are both price-taking firm. It's the same left side of the sheet. In sheet 2, it's a little bit different, although the formula is exactly the same. And in sheet 4, that's the case too. In sheets 2 and 4, the first worker brings in $28, an extra $28, column 5, divided by the 20 units he made, so that first worker brings in an extra $1.40, 28 divided by 20, column 5 divided by column 6, or $1.40 a unit. The second worker brings in an extra $23.09, producing 19 extra units. So that second worker brings in, on his own, $23.09, column 5, divided by 19 units, column 6. So that second worker brings in extra revenue of $1.22 per unit, for each extra unit he made. So column 7 is column 6 divided by column 5 divided by column 6. And you can see that the same results, you'll get the same numbers for both sheets 2 and 4 there. And that's how you do that side. Now, the one point that I have to make here is that you'll notice that you need to do calculations only once, on the left or the right, and then you will be able to repeat that on another sheet. So you'll have to do the you'll have to column sheet 1 on the left and sheet 2 on the left, but then sheets 3 and 4 will be the repeats of 1 and 2 respectively. So you see, you're not doing quite as much work as it looked like in here. Now let me take you over to the cost side, the right side. Now, there are two different types of firms here. In sheet 1, you're seeing a competitive factor market. You notice that your cost per unit is going to stay the same. No matter how many workers you hire, you can pay the last one the same as you paid the one before. There are so many of them, you don't have to compete with better wages. And that's the case in sheet 2. This is a competitive factor market, which simply means that you can pay each extra worker the same as the last worker, because there are so many of them, you're not reducing the supply of them. They are just very easy to pay. Very simple. Now let's go through sheet 1 here. But in sheets 3 and 4, you will notice that in sheets 3 and 4, you have to pay each extra worker more than the last worker, because this is a non-competitive factor market. So every worker you hire makes it harder for you to find the next worker. So in order to bring in a new worker, you have to offer a better pay. And that's true in sheets 3 and 4. You'll notice that those are the same. So what you calculate for sheet 3 and what you calculate for sheet 4 on the left is going to be the same, except for the last column. That's the special column. So sheets 1 and 2 are going to be the same, and sheets 3 and 4 will be the same. On the left. So let's go back to sheet 1. It's really not hard. You just have to crank through it. I give you the cost per unit of the factor. It's going to be $5 no matter how many extra workers you hire. You pay each one $5 an hour or $5 a day or whatever it is. So now the total factor cost. And that's pretty straightforward. Column 1, I hired one worker. Column 8, I paid him $5. So my total factor cost is column 1 times column 8, or 1 times 5 is $5. Going to the next row, when I hired two workers, column 1, I paid each of them, I paid $5. So I'm going to pay a total of two workers times $5 or $10. And for the third worker, I'm going to hire three workers, column 1. I'm going to pay each of them $5, column 8. So column 1 times column 8 is going to be $15. The number of columns almost takes away the obvious simplicity of what you're doing there in that column 9, total factor cost. It's just the number of workers times the cost, the average cost per worker. 3 times 5 is 15. 4 times 5, not surprisingly, is going to be, survey says, $20. Nothing hard there. So column 9 is nothing but column 1 times column 8. Now, the next column, the marginal factor cost, just like any marginal, is going to be the extra cost of the last worker. So in that column, let me make sure, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Column 10, all you're going to do is say, all right, the first worker cost me $5, no workers cost me $0, so that first worker cost me $5. Two workers cost me $10, one worker cost me $5, so that second worker cost me an extra $5. So column 10 is nothing but column 9, the row you're on, minus column 9, the row before, just like any marginal. The marginal cost of the third worker, well, three workers cost us a total of $15, two workers cost us a total of $10, so that column there, 10, is going to be, I'm sorry, let me make sure. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah. Column 10 there will be column 9, the row you're on, minus column 9, the row before. Just like any marginal. It's the extra that last one cost you. Now column 11. That last worker costs, looking at row 1. Looking at one unit of the factor. Now, my marginal factor cost of that first worker was $5, column 10. That worker produced 20 extra units. So I can say that that column 11, marginal factor cost per unit of output, I paid an extra $5, column 10, for that worker. He produced 20 extra units, so column 11 would be column 10, $5, divided by column 6, 20 units. Column 11 is column 10 divided by column 6. And again, there's actually, it's the table itself makes it more complicated than the reasoning behind what's going on. Now look at the second worker. That second worker cost us an extra $5, column 11. Is that right? No, column 10. And that worker produced 19 extra units. So this column 11 here would be the marginal factor cost, column 10 of that worker, divided by the marginal physical product, column 6 of that worker. So again, column 11 is going to be column 10, which is $5 here, divided by column 6, which is 19. And that comes out to be about 26 cents. Now, you might get a penny difference in your answer from what's coming up on this Excel spreadsheet. Don't sweat that if there's a one penny difference. If you get it more than about a penny, then you probably have gotten something wrong. But let's go on to the third worker. The third worker cost us an extra $5. Now, that's column 11. I'm sorry, column 10. Column 10. Now, that third worker costs us an extra $5, column 10, and that third worker produced an extra 18 units. That's column 6. So column 11 for the third worker would be column 10, $5, divided by column 6, 18 units he made. So his cost per unit, column 11, is going to be $5, column 10, divided by 18 units, column 6. And I don't want to fatigue you all just saying the same thing over and over again, but you'll notice that once you get the hang of it, it's just a simple arithmetic formula over and over again. Now, I'll do the last column here. Well, no. Let me point out something here. Now, on the right side, what I've done so far, you notice that sheets 1 and 2 are identical as far as competitive factor market. So once you've done sheet 1, you can just copy that onto sheet 2 because it's the same competitive factor market. You notice the numbers are just going to come out to be the same, except for the last column, which we'll get to back in a minute. So now let me go on and do the non-competitive factor just to repeat myself. The formula will be the same for the right side. It's just that it will be a little bit more, the calculation will come out with a little bit faster rise on column 11. But again, notice that the first worker had an extra cost to the company of $4.50. That's column 10. Now that worker produced an extra 20 units. That's column 6. And again then, your column 11, the marginal factor cost per unit of output, is going to be the marginal factor cost of that first worker. How much that extra worker cost you, $4.50, divided by how much extra output he gave. So that would be column 6. So that would be, so the column 11 would be column 10, $4.50, divided by column 6, 20 units. So that first worker cost us an extra 23 cents per unit that he made. When we get to the second worker, that second worker cost us an extra $4.73. He had a backwash effect. So now we can say, okay, that extra worker, the second worker, cost us an extra $4.73. That second worker made 19 extra units. That's column 6. So column 11, his extra cost per extra output that he gave us would be column 10, $4.73, divided by column 6, 19 units. And that comes out to be 25 cents. Now, doing it one more time, the third worker cost us an extra $4.96. Now that third worker made us an extra 18 units. So for column 11, the extra cost per extra output, we would have $4.96, column 10, divided by 18 units of extra output, column 6. Again, you notice the formula stays the same over and over, even when the factor market is different. So that third worker cost us per unit, the extra cost of that third worker per extra unit he made is 28 cents. And again, you'll notice that because both sheets 3 and 4 are the non-competitive factor market, the numbers will come out to be the same. So once you've completed sheet 3, provided you did it right, you can just put that down on sheet 4. So you see what's happening here is that there's not as much work as it looks like at first in this. Once you've gotten one of the sides done, you can fill that in for another table. Finally, we get to the end of this grueling exercise, and I show you the point. The last column, column 12, is where I'm looking at the extra amount of money a worker brings in per extra unit he made compared to the extra amount of cost that worker is imposing on us for each extra unit he made. So what I'm doing in this last column is I'm seeing, is this worker bringing in more per unit he makes than it is costing us per unit he makes? So this 12th column, the last column, I'm looking at the marginal revenue product, column 7. Let me make sure. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, column 7 minus column 11. In other words, the extra revenue per unit that worker brings in minus the extra cost per unit that worker imposes on us. So column 12 is nothing but column 7 minus column 11. Now you can see that first worker brought in an extra $1 per extra unit he made. And he cost us 25 cents, an extra 25 cents for every extra unit he made. So his contribution, up or down, would be $1 minus 25 cents. So his extra contribution to the firm, how much he brings in per unit minus how much he costs per unit, is positive. It's 75 cents. He will add profit to the firm because he brings in more extra revenue per extra unit he creates than he costs per extra unit he makes. The second worker in this, and we're in sheet 1 now. The second worker brings in an extra $1 per extra unit he makes, and it costs us an extra 26 cents for every extra unit he makes. So the addition to our profit, column 12, marginal revenue product minus marginal factor cost per unit per extra unit of output, is going to be column 7, $1, minus column 11, 26 cents. So that second worker adds 74 cents to our profit. He's bringing in more for every extra unit he makes than he's costing us for every extra unit he makes. Now in column, now the third worker, he brings in an extra $1 for every extra unit he makes. And he costs us 28 cents for every extra unit he makes. So his contribution to our bottom line is going to be column 7, $1, minus column 11, 28 cents. He adds 72 cents to our profit. You notice that in all three of those cases, I'm going to hire the worker because he brings in more for every extra unit he makes than he costs us for every extra unit he makes. But you do notice that this contribution is declining as we hire more workers. Eventually, we will come to a point where hiring another worker will actually hurt profit. We will get a negative number. We wouldn't hire that worker. Now, obviously, I'm going to hire workers 1, 2, and 3 because they add to our profit. It looks like I'll probably hire 4 and 5 and 6. You know, you go down the line, you're going to see that we're going to hire quite a few workers, but sooner or later, column 12 will go negative. We won't hire that worker. It might be like the 12th worker, you get that column 12 is negative. So we would stop hiring at 11 workers. You stop the last place it is zero or positive, column 12. You hire up to the point where that column 12 is at its last place where it's zero or positive. If it's negative, you wouldn't hire that worker. Now you'll notice that it'll be the same. The formula is going to be the same for every one of the tables, the last column. But you notice that the numbers, be cautious because the numbers won't be identical. They look identical from the first three rows I've completed, but they won't be. Down the line, each of these three tables will have the column 12 go negative at a different column 1 row. Again, you will each one of those column 12s you'll calculate on its own. There won't be any repeat. It looks kind of like it is there, but it won't. You will find that in every one of those tables, you will hire a different number of workers. In other words, that column 12 will hit negatives at a different place. And again, remember, your hiring level is the last place it was not negative. Your hiring level, the answer from column 1, how many workers you hire, will be the last place that column 12 is not negative. In other words, it's the last place where column 12 is either zero or positive. Because if you hired one more worker, you would actually hurt your profit. As long as these workers, you're hiring more and they're adding to your profit, you're going to hire them. You're going to stop when it's the last worker that adds to your bottom line, or at least doesn't hurt it. Now here's the upshot. You're not going to turn in the tables. You're going to do the tables, and then you're going to answer a question. I'm going to show you a setup here to give me the answer, and I'll put up a sheet. You can write the answer on a sheet. I'll put it up at hcc-prof.com. You have to get to column 12 to be able to answer the question. But the first thing that you would want to do is now remember that the sheets are dealing with the business side and the labor side. And I'm going to just set up a little matrix here. On the business side, you're going to do two tables that are competitive markets. In other words, the firm is a price taker. If I could spell competitive right. And you're going to do two sheets where the business is in a non-competitive market. In other words, in these markets, the firm is a price seeker. You'll do two tables where the firm is a price taker and two tables where the firm is a price taker. Now on the labor side, you're going to have do two tables. One of them, you're going to do two different types of tables. Two of your tables will be for a competitive factor market. In other words, basically minimum wage workers. And then you're also going to do two tables that are a non-competitive market. In other words, it's like unionized labor or highly educated labor. So this would be sheet one right here. And then sheet two, price seeking, well, okay, sheet two would be non-competitive price seeker against a competitive factor market. Sheet two would be the row one, column two. And then the competitive business, a price taker against the non-competitive labor market. Price taker, yeah, non-competitive, that's sheet three. Is row two, column one. And then sheet four is row two, column two. And all you're going to do is put the amount of labor hired in each for each sheet. In other words, you're going to look at column 12, see how many workers you hire, and put that in the appropriate cell in this 2x2 matrix. Okay, that will get you towards your answer. You're going to find something important. At the end of this kind of painful exercise, you're going to see something important that goes beyond economics and goes beyond just arithmetic and silly tables. You're going to see something. The number will be different in each of these cells. How many workers you hire. That's what this was all about, was finding out how many workers you hire in different scenarios. In other words, where is the profit maximizing for the firm level of workers? Where is it when you have a competitive output market, the business is in a highly competitive market, and the labor is cheap labor, that you can hire as many as you want at minimum wage or something like that? You're going to see a number of workers that you hire when the firm is a monopoly, but it is hiring in cheap labor market, where you can pay all the workers the same basic wage. You're going to find a number of workers when the firm is in a highly competitive output market, but it is facing like a labor union, or it's somehow the workers get more expensive as you hire more of them. And then you're going to find a number of workers when the firm is a monopoly and the labor market is unionized, or otherwise it costs more to hire more workers. You're going to find a number for each one of these. Each number will be different. I tell you that right now. You're going to find that one of the markets has the highest level of employment. One of these cells will have the highest number, largest number. That's important for you, okay? That's important. But you're going to see something else in there. So the answer, you have two questions that you have to answer. Well, you have to show me the sheet. All you have to do is show me this. You don't have to turn in the calculations. You just have to show me this matrix, the numbers in each of these cells. And then, question one. In which market is employment of labor the highest? Answer me with a complete sentence. In other words, well, I find that in a competitive when the company is a price taker and the labor market is highly competitive, employment is the highest. Okay? Again, you say I found that, let's say it was row 1, column 1. You would just simply say, employment is the highest when the firms are in competition and the labor market is highly competitive. Something along that line. You don't have to say it like that. Just say it in a logically, clearly, coherent way. Now comes the second thing. You have to look at the matrix because you're going to see something in there. You're going to see that two of the four cells in the matrix have larger numbers, noticeably larger numbers, than two of the other cells. There will be two cells in here that have numbers that are fairly close. One of them will be the highest, and that will be the one you answer for question one. But there will be another one that won't be too much behind it. But then there will be two other cells that will be noticeably lower employment rates, employment numbers. You will see it. It will stick out that two of the cells will be noticeably bigger numbers than two of the other cells. This is the crux that goes, again, beyond just simple doing stupid tables and even a little bit beyond the economics. And it goes to political and socio-political considerations. Out of that table, you're going to see something about what kinds of markets have higher employment than the other kinds of markets. You're going to find something that is surprising, considering the way that the political discourse goes these days. You're going to see that the two cells that have the higher numbers have something in common, and the two cells that have the lower numbers have something in common. What causes employment to be lower? Is it the business side? Or is it the labor side? I'm leading you a little bit here, helping you see what's going on. In other words, are the employment levels lower by row, or are they lower by column? Look at the numbers, and you'll see that it's pretty obvious that one side of the market is much more important to whether we have high employment or low employment than the other side of the market. In other words, is it whether the companies are competitive or monopoly that matters, or is it whether or not the labor is cheap or unionized or expensive? What is it that drives employment levels? You'll see that two of those numbers are pretty big compared to the other two numbers. And you will answer in question two, what is it that causes employment to be lower? Is it companies or is it the labor market? So all you have to do is give me the matrix so I see that you found the right numbers, and then answer the two questions. And again, I'll put up a sheet tonight that you can print out and write your answers on if you so choose. But that's what this boils down to. All those numbers are just getting us to something that is beyond numbers, that goes clear to our political discourse. What makes us have high, what causes unemployment? And that should direct policy, although it doesn't. So that's your assignment, and that's all I have for you today. I thank you.